Like many of us, I trust, for the past several weeks, I feel as if I have been dodging and weaving through my days. In our pseudo-Christian culture, we are flooded with what passes as preparation for Christmas. And most of it is distracting at best and feels soul-draining at worst. Somehow it doesn't quite seem to serve to bring us quieter, closer, more still. I suppose it's no wonder that when we are fed a steady diet of things like ABC's Light Fight, where contestants vie for the most Christmas lights on a house strung in the most outrageous ways, or when we imbibe sentimentalism that attempts to pass for real feeling, it's when this happens that when we show up on this night, at this moment, we often come hungry. Hungry because the empty calories of these past few months have done little to satisfy our real and deep longings. I, for one, have spent many of these past days wondering, is this it? What if my world isn't merry and bright? What then? What does this Christmas story tell us then? It was the 20th century theologian Karl Barth who said that a preacher should preach with the newspaper in one hand and the Bible in the other. So I've had these texts on my mind and on my heart for the past week or so, and I've been looking and listening. And so it was yesterday, as I was scrolling down through Google News and taking in the events of the world, that I was stopped cold by two images, almost side by side, a visual parable of sorts. One image was of a Dinka tribesman in South Sudan. He is dressed in tribal clothing with scores of cattle, you know, with those tall, curling horns behind him. It could have been from the 8th century, the 16th century. As you may know, as of this night, South Sudan stands on the precipice of ethnic war. And right now the world holds its breath, once again fearing the worst. And in this picture, slung over the shoulder of this herdsman, gripped in his hands, is the most iconic of weapons, an AK-47. The second photo I saw is of a grinning Mikhail Kalashnikov. You may recognize his name even if you do not know his life's story, as he just died on Sunday. It has been said that of all the fearsome weapons of war that we have created, the greatest weapon of mass destruction so far in human history was created in the 20th century, and that as devastating as the nuclear bomb is, in terms of sheer number of human deaths, the deadliest weapon known to humankind is the one invented by Mikhail Kalashnikov, that same AK-47. Efficient, highly reproducible, so simple that even children fire and clean it, it has been the weapon of choice for revolutions, for coup d'etat, for civil wars for over 6 decades. And this night, the creation of the late Mikhail Kalashnikov sits in the hands of Dinka and Nuer alike in South Sudan and in a host of other places of war and unrest. What of Mikhail Kalashnikov in South Sudan? Why bid them present this silent, holy night? I do so because it seems to me that they tell a story of this world, an ancient story. That the only way to achieve peace is through violence. That we can only be secure through force. And to be clear, at this moment, many in South Sudan are simply trying to stay alive, attempting to protect their mothers and fathers, their brothers and sisters, their wives, husbands, and children. And that if it hadn't been Mikhail Kalashnikov, someone else would have used their creative gifts towards the same ruthlessly efficient end. But this story is an ancient one, whether of the Soviet Union, of South Sudan, or of Assyria, Rome, England, or the United States. It is all the same. Whether told by empire, corporation, or family, it goes like this. We are safe only because we have power over others. We gather this night, this holy night, to tell of another story. And like any family, we come together to tell the story of a loved one's birth. Now, we do this in our house on the days of our son's birth, and one of them starts like this. We were driving back home, having visited your grandparents for Thanksgiving, and the challenge for us tonight, telling this story of the birth of Jesus, is that we've told this story so many times, and often in ways that have served to soften the focus and obscure the background, that it is hard for us to see and to hear this story anew. And the danger is that if this night simply becomes singing some touching hymns, lighting candles, and going home, then we've missed it. Missed the terror, the awe, the wonder. For I believe that when we're honest, most parents will acknowledge the real terror that can accompany childbirth. In the ancient world in the first century and in parts of this world in this century, giving birth is one of the most dangerous things a woman can do. And even when it goes well, it is often accompanied by a sense of terrifying awe and wonder. And this just wasn't any world that Jesus of Nazareth was born into. In the story that Luke tells us, the Roman Empire, through Emperor Augustus, has set the stage. It is one of occupation, military enforcement, and peace at the end of a sword that rules Palestine. And so vulnerable, away from hearth and home, Joseph and Mary are forced to shelter in space set aside for animals. And yet, in the midst of all this fear and trembling, a child is born. God with us. Searing lights in a darkened field begin to proclaim the story, this story, the only way that it can begin. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. For even in a world of 100 million Kalashnikov rifles and counting, In a world where violence, poverty, fear, and oppression threaten us near and far, we gather this night to proclaim a truth. Good news of great joy. Simply put, in the form of a helpless infant, we are told that matter matters, that we matter, all of us, every part of us. Not because Lexus is aware of our status, or because Macy's thinks that we're beautiful, or because Apple knows that we are clever. We matter because we are and because God is. And so on this night, we trust that who we are and what we do matters. On this night, we trust that love, even and especially in the midst of the stories of this world of chaos and fear and violence, that love is the basic unit of life. On this night, we trust that in this life of change and chance, there is purpose. That the Maker has such great love for us in all of our hurt, our mess, our shame, such great love for us that all that is was made human. To be born, to live, to die, to be like us that we might be like God. On this night, we come year after year to wonder, to believe, to trust in this glorious impossible. Why did you come here tonight? Really, why did you come here tonight? Or maybe more importantly, what did you come here looking for? Because the strings, these images, the candles, the hymns, these are all simply guides, right? To bring us closer to a belief, a trust, that even when we are at our most vulnerable, when it is simply not clear what lays ahead, it is then that God is present. Even under occupation, even outside of the centers of power, even when it seems unlikely or downright impossible. So this past week, as I've been pondering all these things in my heart, I've been wondering what might change. What might change if we trusted that all of this matters? Us, our flesh and blood, all of our glory and all of our brokenness, those we love and those we hate. What might change if we trusted that there is purpose to this mess? And that the purpose in this mess is to reveal that love is the basic unit of life. In the face of life, and of all the deaths around us that are real and are frightening, what might it be like to trust in God's presence enough to truly live? This does not mean we will not die, but it may mean that we truly live. Right? Not just to hedge our bets or to settle for empty calories, but to really give ourselves in trust that there is a birth awaiting. That the stories of this world that tell of power, of scarcity, of security from force, are simply fears of death and are not the final word. If you could trust that all that is waiting for your every step, what would you do? Stepping out from this silent, holy night, what story might you tell?